Hey, last week of John, the book of John, this is our 15th week in the book of John. So I hope you've enjoyed the summer as we've spent time reading this. And so if you've got a Bible, we're going to start John 20. 10 verses that I love so much, typically reading at Easter time, but for the sake of our series, we're reading it today outside of the cross. And to me, these 10 verses have so much truth that I won't get into all of them. But this to me is the, yes, we know Jesus loves us. Yes, we know he died for us. But to me, these 10 verses are just, they're comical, they're personal, and they're very impactful. So verse 1 of chapter 20, early on Sunday morning, for all my early morning people, where are you at? My morning people, where's my morning people? Come on. Oh my gosh. Guys, there's other churches, all right? No early morning people, like nobody getting up, you just love life. Like, just, where's my, you don't even need coffee, like morning, no? All right, so you've not even read this passage then, because it says early on Sunday morning, while it was still dark. Nobody loves that? No? Oh, just me. All right, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb, and she found that the stone had been rolled away from the entrance, and she ran and found Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved. Now, I just love this, right? Who's writing this? John is, okay? And John is the disciple that Jesus loved. And so I love that. So he's talking about himself. And she said, they've taken the Lord's body out of the tomb and we don't know where they put him. And Peter and the other disciple started out for the tomb. That's himself. They were both running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He stooped in, he looked in, and he saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he didn't go in. Then Simon Peter arrived and went inside, and he also noticed the linen wrappings lying there, while the cloth that had covered Jesus' head was folded, lying up apart from the other wrappings. Then the disciple who had reached the tomb, and he believed, for himself also went in, just telling us again that he's a quick runner. He saw and he believed, for until then they still hadn't understood the scriptures that said Jesus must rise from the dead. And then they went home. God, I just pray today, despite where we're at, despite what's happening, God, I pray that you'd meet us where we are. God, whatever has our attention this morning, wherever our focus is at, God, I pray that it would align with you, with what you're saying. God, help us to hear your voice in Jesus' name. Amen. Peter's story is real. Peter's story is my story. It's your story. Peter is in us. That's what makes his story so personal. It's a story that involves a calling, a risk, fumbles, cockiness, denial, privilege. His story is a story of grace, of love, renewal. Having said this, we realize that this story is in the first place about Jesus. It's a story of Peter's denial, but something changed after Peter denied Christ. And we'll get into that. But something changed. Something died in Peter. Something confident-wise, we know he's bold, we know he's arrogant, we know he usually speaks up when nobody else is speaking up, but something died when he denied Christ. Something changed. Something was killed. Jesus, the first time they met, and said, he looked at Simon at the time he went by Simon. He said, Simon, I'm going to change your name to Peter, which means rock. But after he denied Christ, it wasn't like he was rock. It was like he was sand. Something had shaken inside of him. His courage, his strength, his boldness had all been taken away. Has there ever been a moment in your life where you're just not as confident as you used to be? You're just not the same. People around you see it. They see the nail. You don't see the nail. You don't see that there's something different. You see circumstance. You see what has happened to you. You see what people have done to you. You don't see what you've done. You just know something's changed. This is where Peter is. Peter's changed. He's been crushed. And at this moment, everything about Peter, his entire being, depended on Jesus. And maybe that's the point. Maybe the point is that what happens to us is to push us towards Jesus. That sometimes We don't go towards Jesus. We go the opposite way. If you look at Judas and you look at Peter and you study their lives are pretty much the same. They've failed. They've messed up. They denied Christ. Yet Judas went this way and he bailed out. Peter went this way. Why? Because you and I respond totally different when something happens to us. And this moment, we understand why Peter ran. It wasn't that Peter was chasing or racing John. It wasn't. He was running because he'd experienced forgiveness. He'd experienced this adulterous woman that should have been killed, and Jesus forgave her. He experienced this man that was dead, and Jesus rose him from the grave. He ran because he knew he had failed God, and he wanted to experience redemption. And so he ran. It didn't say he moseyed to the tomb. It said he ran. And he also tells us he wasn't very fast. For John beat him. John tells us twice that he won. Peter failed. Can we put something out there? Everybody in this room has failed. This is an all-inclusive message. Every single one of us, we failed. I didn't say you've made a mistake. I didn't say you made an accident. Those are totally different things. Failure and accidents are different. Failure is I did it. I intended to do it and I did it. I didn't, no, you made a conscious decision. I didn't accidentally embezzle money. No, you made a conscious decision and you messed up. You failed. This story is a two-part story though. He chose to fail and Jesus chose to restore him. That's the point. The point isn't that we've already established we've all failed. We've already established we've all messed up. That's not the point. The point is that Jesus restores. The point is that there is hope. If there's not hope, and Jesus just said, you messed up, that's why Jesus said, this is an event, not a destiny. Okay? That's what he's saying to us today. Because every single one of us failed. This is about how we respond to failure. And more importantly, how do we treat people when they fail? How do you treat someone when they fail you? Let me ask this, and we'll get back to the question, but you think about it. Do I leave the door open when someone failed me, or do I shut the door? Because ultimately, that's what you're responsible for. You're not responsible for whether they failed you. That's not your call. They failed you. You know it. God knows it. Everybody around you know it because you got a mouth. So everybody knows it. That's not the question. The question isn't whether they failed you. The question is, have you left a door open for restoration to happen? Because that's the hard thing. The hard thing is restoration. The hard thing is reinstating. The hard thing is loving someone who's failed you. It's not hard to love people that love you. It's hard to love people that's failed you. And that you're responsible to treat people the way Christ treated us when we failed him. And that is to leave the door open. Not to unfriend, not to ignore, not to gossip about, not to run from them in the grocery store. It is to leave the door open for restoring. And some of you in this room, you have been so hurt. You have been so messed up by people. People that you love and people that love you. You've been so messed up, but I'm telling you right now, you're responding wrong. And nobody's ever told you that. And because of that, you're bitter. You're not better. Because of that, you're doing exactly what's been done to you, because ultimately hurt people hurt people. Hurt people don't love people. Hurt people don't forgive. It's because we've never dealt with the hurt, and so now we're doing what's been done to us. And guys, this is very difficult to hear because it's very difficult to live out. This is not fun, right? This is not like, oh man, I just love people who fail me. Dude, those are my people. I feel called to the people that hurt me. Man, I just love them. Jesus took charge of the restoration. Hear this. And here's what I'm about to say to you. It's time for you to take charge in the restoration process. You're like, nope, I'm good. Some of you need to friend request the people that hurt you. Not unfriend them. Because guess what? Jesus didn't unfriend you. Well, I know Jesus doesn't have Facebook, but whatever. Failure doesn't mean you have blown everything. It means you have some hard lessons to learn. Failure doesn't mean you're a permanent loser. It means you're not as smart as you thought you were. Failure doesn't mean you should give up. It means that you need the Lord. That's all it means. Failure doesn't mean that God has abandoned you. It means that God has a better plan than you thought. That's what it means. It's an event, not a destiny. And when we fail, when you and I fail, especially when we fail the people that we love, what most comes to mind are a lot of emotions, right? Embarrassment, anger, worry, fear, all of these things, shame, despair, all of these things, they all come to mind. We feel undirty, we feel unworthy, we feel shame, we feel all of these things when we fail. This is where Peter is. He never forgot. He started saying things, will I ever be forgiven? Am I a disciple? Am I a child of God? What am I? And it sounds ridiculous, right? It sounds so crazy, but yet this is what we do. This is what we do. We start questioning who we are when we fail or someone fails us. We start questioning because you and I isolate ourselves. And when we isolate ourselves, it makes it so much worse. Especially when we isolate ourselves from people that love us the most. So here's what Jesus does with Peter. We need to see two things. This is what God does to us. Okay? This is how God treats us. But secondly, this is how we're supposed to treat others. I'm not going to give you things that are easy, okay? This is not going to be easy. I'm giving you up front, all right? Up front. In fact, we'll all bow our heads and close our eyes if you want to sneak out. Okay. Some of you wish you were faster. You're not. First thing Jesus does is Jesus asks him by name. Jesus asks him for Peter by name. Mark 16:7 says, now go and tell the disciples, including Peter, by name. Go tell my disciples, including Peter, just as that Jesus is going ahead of you to Galilee. You will see him there, just as he told you before he died. Peter's denial, Peter's failure, had separated him from the other disciples. Jesus just now included him by name. He didn't say, go tell my disciples, but don't tell Peter. Do not tell him. In fact, we're keeping it a secret. How many times do you invite certain friends or certain families over, but you don't invite that one guy? Why? Because you're hurt. We're not going to invite him. I'll show him. Well, good job. You just brought yourself to his level, and now you're mad at him for what he did to you. Now, I guess the question would be, who's better? You're equal. And the same hurt you've been hurt by, you're welcome. You're not hurting others with. The same thing. We see this all throughout. Luke 22. See this. Verse 61. At that moment, this is after his denial. At that moment, the Lord turned. Now keep this in mind. Peter denies Jesus around a campfire. Okay? Camping's not always fun, you guys. Around a campfire, he denies Jesus. And it says Jesus is being led away on trial, crucified. All of these things are happening. Look what it says. At that moment, the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Suddenly, the Lord's words flashed through Peter's mind. And before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you'll deny me three times that you even know me. And Peter left the courtyard doing what? Weeping bitterly. Weeping bitterly. He left and he wept bitterly. The risen Christ sins for him. He doesn't write Peter off. He doesn't make him the biggest loser or put him in that category. He still has plans for Peter. He asks for him by name, and secondly, he meets with him. This to me is the best thing that gives us hope. Because look at this. Luke 24 and 1 Corinthians 15 both tell us the same thing. It says this, verse 33. This is the story of Emmaus where the guys were going back. The two guys, Cleopas and another guy who's not even cool enough to get his name in the Bible. But the other guy's name's Cleopas. So, I might not want my name in the Bible if my name's Cleopas, right? I mean, it's like, don't name me. Like, don't put it in there. They're on their way home. It says they're mad. They're upset that Jesus has died. All hope is lost. There they found the 11 disciples, and the other came and talked to him. It says, and within the hour, they were on their way back to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 disciples and the others who had gathered with them, who said, the Lord has risen, and he appeared to Peter. 1 Corinthians says this, he was raised on the third day according to the scriptures, and that he had appeared to Peter and then to the 12. Here's what Jesus does. Jesus says, not all of you denied me, only one of you did, and it was Peter, and I told him he was going to do it, and he did it anyway. Peter is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, all right? So he is just out there, right? I mean, he's like a lot of our kids. You told them once, they do it anyway, right? Nope, no parents like that? No, none of your kids? They're perfect. I know. They should all be on varsity. Anyway, so... Jesus did what you and I have to see that we should do. It says that Jesus met with Peter because this was about Jesus and Peter, not about Jesus and the disciples. You and I make it about Jesus and Peter and the disciples. Jesus comes in, relationship 101, and says, nope, it's just about me and Peter. And me and Peter are the only ones who need to meet about it. We don't need to bring all the others in on it. You and I have a good tendency to bring all the others in on it. You know why? Because we need confirmation that we're right. So we tell our friends, can you believe what so-and-so did? Oh, girl, I cannot believe they did that. You are so right in this, and that's what you needed. That's all you needed. That is all you needed. And then now you and so-and-so are making it right, but guess what? Guess what the person that you called first is doing? They're carrying the offense that your friend did to you all because you let them in. Jesus doesn't do that. He appears to Peter first. We don't know what was said. We don't know if they hugged it out. We don't know if Peter, what? We don't know anything. We just know that he met with them one-on-one before he ever saw the disciples. You and I need to see this because you and I have a hard time when we fail on how we're restored to Jesus. We don't think he knows our names anymore. We go to the extreme. Does God even really love me? Oh my gosh, look at my family. They're so messed up. See, I knew Jesus didn't love me. We get so crazy. This is where Peter was. So much that Jesus comes and says, hey, before I ever meet the disciples, let me show you. I'm going to meet you where you're at. It doesn't say he sent for Peter and said, Peter, fix your mess and then I'll come meet with you. Get your stuff in order. He didn't say that. He says, I met with Peter first and foremost one-on-one. I'm not getting all the other crazies involved. It's just me and you. Let's make this right. There's someone in your life that you need to make things right. The problem is we've included the crowd. And now your family doesn't like so-and-so, but they don't like so-and-so because of what they did to that person. They don't like so-and-so because of what you told them. And your story and my story, usually when I tell somebody else, usually tends to bend in my direction. Typically, no time am I telling my wife about something that someone's done to me and I come out looking bad, right? You should believe, I mean, I was totally wrong. They were right. But I'm just telling you because, no, that doesn't happen that way. It's no different. Jesus has given us a lesson on relationships. If you got a problem with somebody, go to them before you go to the other disciples. And we need to see that. But Jesus didn't come in and say, hey, it's cool that you denied me. Says he challenged him. Jesus challenged Peter. Look at this in chapter 21. We see it's the evening, Sea of Galilee, not long after the resurrection. Peter, six other disciples, spend the night fishing, and they're catching nothing. Now, what is Peter's profession? Anybody? He's a fisherman, just an FYI. He spent all night catching nothing. Some fishermen you are. Catching nothing. Okay, this is John 21. And it says, in the morning, because Jesus is a morning person, FYI. In the morning, Jesus called from the shore. Okay, I'm paraphrasing. This is my slant on things. Everybody's got a translation. I can have one too. He calls from the shore, and they recognize his voice, okay? Peter does this whole Forrest Gump thing. He sees Jesus, and he's like, jumps out. and swims to the shore. Straight up, Lieutenant Dan style, right? Lieutenant Dan's in the wheelchair. Peter gets down. Hey, Jesus, you came. Some of you are like, I've never seen Forrest Gump. Well, it's because it was out before most of you were born. Like, it was came out in 1994, you know? But that, I mean, you remember that, right? Lieutenant Dan's on the end. He's got the boat, and he's like waving. He just jumps out. It says this about Peter. He sees Jesus. He just jumps out. It actually says he put his clothes on. So Peter's naked in the boat. He puts his clothes on and jumps in the water and gets to Jesus. To me, that's incredible. I mean, before Forrest Gump was Peter, right? Straight up out of Forrest Gump. It's incredible. And then you're going, he finds out Jesus was there all night. This will mess with your theology, you guys. Jesus was there all night watching them fail. Jesus, could you have maybe said something sooner? What does Jesus say? Jesus says, hey, boys. He didn't say, hey, it's Jesus, everybody. What's up? He said, hey, put your net on the other side. Peter remembers Luke 5, where Jesus told them that the first time. And it says that they did that, and the nets were so full, they were breaking the fish. Peter hears that. They throw the nets on the other side. Not Peter. He's jumping in the water. They throw it in. The Bible's so specific. It says they caught 153 fish. It's a lot of fish after not catching anything all night. Jesus not only asks for Peter, he meets Peter where he is, and he sees Peter failing in what he's an expert at. Jesus allowed Peter to fail. Some of you are like, I don't like that kind of Jesus. I don't like when Jesus allows me to fail. Guess what? The only way sometimes you learn is to fail. Oh, that's not fun. Bill Gates says it this way. Success is a lousy teacher. It makes smart people think that they can't lose. Had Peter caught 153 fish without Jesus, do you think they hear Jesus' voice? Disciples needed to fail so that they could learn to lean on Jesus. Do you know that there's moments in all of our lives where we need to learn to lean on Jesus because we're leaning on ourselves too much, thus the reason we're failing? And this is what Peter, this is the other cool thing. And look at this. Jesus not only asks for him, he not only meets him where he's at, he not only challenges him, he reinstates him. And this is what you and I need to see. Jesus doesn't forgive Peter, he reinstates him to never be the same again. Keep reading Acts. Peter never denied Christ again. Well, some of you go, well, I mean, that's kind of a coincidence. No, it's not. It's vital. Your forgiveness could change someone's life so much that they're never the same again. Thus, the reason you leave the door open. Let me ask you this. Prodigal son, a lot of us know the story. You can read it yourself. Luke 10. Prodigal son, if the dad says, get the blank out of my house and never come back here again, you are dead to me as a son. Do you think he's ever an option? Do you think he's lying in the pig pen? Life sucks, and he's lying there and goes, you know what, maybe I'll just go back to my dad. You know why he doesn't do that? Because his dad wanted to be an option. That when life got difficult and he started to fail, that he would think of his dad, and in thinking of his dad, go, that's him, restoration. Which begs the question, restoration sometimes in relationships doesn't happen not because of what they did, but because of how we left it. And we don't like to hear it because we like to hear they're wrong and I'm right. But what if they are wrong and you're right? You've just not left it right. Yes, no one's denying they failed you. No one's denying they're a little screwy in the head. No one's denying that what they did to you is wrong. But what's even worse than that is you're not allowing restoration to happen. This is Jesus, you guys. This is not Jamie Bridges. This is not Life Community Church. This is Jesus saying, listen, if you want restoration and being reinstated, then you have to treat people that way. the same love, the same grace, the same mercy, the same forgiveness that you've been given, you also must be given to other people. This is not a, well, so-and-so did so much worse to us. Jesus said, stop with your excuses and love people. He reinstates. Grace is not grace so that you can be forgiven. Grace is an empowering thing that happens so you're never the same again. That's why grace is important. Forgiveness is great. Let me ask this. Your husband failed you. Your wife failed you. You've forgiven them. How difficult is it to forgive them the next time? So then if I said to you, forgive them, love them, continue to extend grace. And I said, in the promise of that, at some points, they'll be different. They're going to be changed. They're going to be healed. They're going to be stronger than ever. You're going to choose that, right? Well, guess what? For that to happen, you have to extend grace. For that to happen, you have to love them when they fail you. That's what's hard. So Jesus says in John 21, what I've already talked about, when Jesus asked him after breakfast, I find this funny too. Peter gets to the shore and Jesus is cooking fish, right? He's like, I already got some. Would you like some? I know they got 153. That's cool. But would you like some of my fish? That's awesome. So after breakfast, Jesus said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Then feed my lambs. Jesus repeated the question, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said, Lord, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And take care of my sheep. A third time he asked, and Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, Lord, you know everything, and you know that I love you. And Jesus said, then feed my sheep. By one fire, John 21, 9, John 18, 18. John 18, 18 says that there was a fire that was happening, and someone said to Jesus, do you know Christ? And he says, I don't know him. It says, only two times in Scripture where it says they made a charcoal fire. Okay? John 18, 18. You come to John 21, 9, Jesus is on the shore. Peter swims. He gets there. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them. Fish cooking over a what? Charcoal fire. You can't tell me that that smell didn't remind Peter of something. You know, there's times in your life when someone fails you, you don't have to say anything. They just know. Peter knew when he ran to the tomb and when he got out of the boat, he knew. People don't need to be told they're sinners. They just need to be loved. People don't need to be told you're a loser. They already know it. They feel the shame. They feel the guilt. You're not helping. Just love them. You know, that day Jesus didn't have to say anything. All he had to do is make a charcoal fire. And it reminded Peter of what he went through. And so he asked, do you love me? Why three times? Well, to me, because Peter denied him three times. You want to know when someone fails you? There's a bigger reason. What's the one thing you want to know when someone fails you? Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you even love me? Jesus is asking him three times because he knows what Peter is about to go through. He knows so much that he says, Peter, listen, there was a moment in your life where you didn't care or you didn't ask about what to wear and all those things, but there will be a day when you will die a horrible death. And I'm saying these things to you because when you know you're loved, you can go through those things. And he's asking them, do you know? Do you know? Do you know that I love you? Do you know? Because I want you to know when it gets really difficult, when it gets really hard, don't deny me again. Don't deny me again. Do you love me, Peter? Do you love me? And then what? Look. I mean, look at John 21. What about these guys? She said, don't worry about those guys. Worry about yourselves. I mean, how many times his parents? He's like, good Lord, son. I mean, what about her? I mean, she's doing the same thing. I'm not talking to her. I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you. Figure it out. And I like her better. I'm sorry. There's just something about her. I just like her, you know? You're not supposed to have favorites. It doesn't say that in the Bible. It says John, the one Jesus loved. I mean, just saying. You're just my John. You're just my Peter, you know? Okay. Oh, man. In his reply, Peter declares his love for Jesus. Why is this important? This is important because from here on out, his love for Jesus has to be the motivation of why he does what he does. Which brings me to this question. This is a question for you. What is your motivation? What is your motivation in everything that you do? As a husband, as a father, as an employee, if your motivation is out of your love for Jesus, then you'll be able to serve others well. If my motivation is out of my love for Jesus, then it's easy to forgive. If my motivation is out of my love for Jesus, then it's easy to have calm conversations. You know, when I'm knowing that my love and the way I'm serving people is not out of my love for Jesus, when I'm neglecting Jesus. When I'm neglecting Jesus, then I bring Jamie into the conversation. I bring Jamie into the relationship. And what does that mean? That means I bring hurt into the relationship. It's not birthed out of my love for Jesus. And he asked him if he loved him 3 times because he needed the rest of his life to be birthed out of his love for Jesus. There's no way you're serving the people that you need to serve without the love of Jesus. There's no way. There's no way you're going to sacrifice your life, your time, your money, and serve people without the love of Jesus. It's impossible. And if you do it, it's not going to be a long period of time. You know why it's not going to be long? Because you're going to get tired. Guess what happens when you get tired? You have to rely on Jesus. So it always comes back to, do you love me? Because if I'm not doing what I'm called to do out of my love for Jesus, then it's about my name. It's about making something other than Jesus famous. It's about doing all of these things for the wrong reasons. So Jesus had to ask Peter, do you love me? He had to hear him say it, and he had to do it publicly. The other guys are now there. They needed to hear it. The first question, do be more than these. Who are these? The other disciples. Do you love me? Because there's going to be a moment, Peter, where you're going to be faced where someone's going to ask you to deny me again, and it's going to cost you your life. It's going to cost you. Now, I get it. We live in America. We don't experience persecution. That doesn't mean we don't deny Jesus. Our actions, by our words, we're just not hearing the rooster. That's the reality. We failed him, you guys. But the promise is, the promise from Jesus, not the promise from me, the promise from Jesus is he still calls you by name, he still meets you where you're at, and he reinstates you. He reinstates you, guys. This is hope for every person in this room that's failed. You know who that's hope for? Every single one of us. Every single one of us. In fact, Jesus is asking us today, right now, to start treating people the way that Jesus treated us. Listen, next week, there's going to be, because I love these bands, you know? And it simply says this, living every day like Jesus. And I wear these bands because I need reminded. Because God brings crazy people in my life. And then people outside of my family. Not my in-laws. We need reminded to live every day like Jesus. You and I need to be reminded. So this is not just today thing. This is how do I every single day continue to treat people like Jesus? And the example is the way Jesus treated Peter in his failure is how he treats us. And the call of how we treat others. That's the call. And I can promise you this. Listen, when Peter stood up, man, picture this in Acts 2. He stood up okay? Weak, cowardly Peter. Fire, right? Nope, I don't know Jesus. I don't know who he is. A couple people, right? The same people that crucified Jesus, he now is standing in front of, and he gives this account. He says, men, you crucified Christ, but I'm telling you, this same Christ that you crucified, he came and he died on a cross for me. He's boldly declaring this, right? In front of all these people. And it said 3,000 people said, I want to follow Jesus that day. Coward denying Jesus, this guy now stands in front and 3,000 people go, I want what he's talking about. Come on, you guys. So don't go, well, you don't understand my past. You don't understand what I've done. I don't know how God can use me. Hello. Are you kidding me? He denied him. He denied him. And now boldly stood in front and said, guys, what would that ultimately do? Ultimately cost him his life. And God doesn't want to use you? Come on. Come on. I would say this. He not only wants to use you, not only wants to use your story, the question is, why isn't it happening? That's the question. Well, maybe God changed. Nope. Same grace, the same mercy that he gave to Peter, he's giving to us right now. Amen? Would you stand on your feet with me? This is a weird thanks right now. This is a weird thank you prayer. God, I thank you for the times that I failed. God, I thank you for the times that I missed it. I messed up. I failed you. But God, I'm so grateful in that moment that I realized that your grace is sufficient for me. Man, what an incredible prayer. God, thank you for my failure. Because in my failure, I realized that I'm not enough. I need you. God, our prayer is this. You all across this place, whatever is happening, God, our prayer is this. You can have it all. My failure, my pride, my self-confidence, who I am apart from you, God, you can have every single bit of it. God, it's yours. It's yours. And God, today, this day, August the 12th, 2018 is a day, God, that we say, Lord, I never want to be the same again. If you can take a coward denying Jesus, man in Peter, and transform his life to where he was never the same again, never to deny Christ again, to boldly stand up and declare the promise of God. If you can take him, God, what could you do with the people in this room? What could you do in this room? God, our prayers, God, would you use us in such a great way that the name of Jesus goes forth. So that people, men and women, would come to know you, the Christ. Come on, as we sing this song, can we make this our prayer? God, can we start confessing, God, this is my failure, this is my past, but God, I'm so thankful you meet me where I'm at. Come on, make this our prayer. You can have it all.